Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
Matt Ritchie fires the ball into the back of the net. Edison went the right way, but Matt Ritchie has positioned it perfectly into the bottom corner.
Bournemouth 4, Chelsea 0. Charlie Daniels off the bench to add to the humiliation for Chelsea.
Fernando Llorente is heading home and probably giving Spurs victory. It was a peach of a cross by Danny Rose from the left-hand side.
Leicester City, Liverpool 1, Leicester City 1. Liverpool looked as though they dealt with a free kick given away stupidly by Robertson on the Liverpool left-hand side, but it was nodded back into the middle. It seemed as if in slow motion, Maguire was onside. He was all on his own, and he's tapped the ball into the back of the net.
It's the Premier League preview show for week 25 of the 18-19 season. After the madness of midweek, the top flight returns on Saturday with things in the balance right across the division. Liverpool are 5 points clear at the top, but it could have been seven. How will the Reds get on against their usual whipping boys in depleted West Ham? City lost at Newcastle, but the basket case of Arsenal won't be an easy opponent to return to winning ways against. And Chelsea were thumped for four by Bournemouth. And if Sarri can't motivate his players to respond against bottom boys Huddersfield, then who can he inspire them to beat? And just how long will he make the media wait for him if he can't inspire them to victory? I'm Tom Rennie and this is the Premier League Preview Show. Let's say hello to our panel for the day. Wearing red for the closure of the transfer window, in his own club tracksuit no less, is TalkSport's football editor David Walker. You're right, mate.
We're all on red alert.
We're all on red alert, of course we are.
Transfer deadline day here at TalkSport.
So we don't know about the big £100 million transfer that happened at midnight tonight. We don't know as we record the programme. So we might have missed out on the big David Walker signs for Watford, exclusive.
From Ribblesdale Rovers.
How will they cope? You still? Is this your team currently?
That is my team, yeah.
Where are you in the league? You're doing well?
We are fifth, I think.
Very much.
In a league of 10 teams.
Very much everyone at TalkSport's second team, Ribblesdale. Look out for their results on Teletext this
weekend. South London Sunday League. Brilliant.
Great side. And we look forward to hearing more about them in next week's preview show. Also with us this week, two other professionals alongside David Walker. Let's say hello first to Daniel Gabberdon, former Cardiff, West Ham and Palace man. Good to see you, mate.
Tom, Dave, how are you doing?
We're all right, mate. You're not wearing red. I'm not wearing red. Did you not get the memo this morning? Do you read memos?
Super busy, that.
You normally wear black, though, don't you? You're a bit like an extra in the Matrix.
Yeah, a little bit.
You could have brought one of the Cardiff shirts from a few years ago.
You could have done. There must be loads left in a factory somewhere.
I was trying to forget that period.
A warehouse full of red shirts, unsold.
Yeah, I think I've still got a couple, actually, in the house. Wash my car with them.
And also a man who could have worn red, the former Man United man, Ben Thornley's here as well. Where's your shirt, mate?
No, I didn't get the memo either, Tom, I'm afraid.
You used to be in the shirt that had that weird faded grey collar, right, that was faded really badly.
I've played in some pretty horrific strips at Man United, I can assure you. Everybody remembers the green and yellow.
Oh, I like that one. That was a nice one with the strings.
With the string, yeah.
I thought that was a really nice kit. That was one of those 90s ones. The red one with the string and the green and yellow. Didn't you win in the cup away somewhere in that kit?
Sheffield United.
Quite famously, the Sheffield United game.
Yeah, Sheffield United, yeah.
That was watched by like 20 million on the BBC or something like that.
Were you around still with the grey kit? The infamous grey kit, yeah?
I played in the game.
Really? Yeah, in Southampton,
yeah. Yeah.
No
yeah.
one saw him, though. Nothing to do with the kit. Let's move on. Let's talk about the games coming up. Sorry, mate. Thanks for coming in. Let's talk about the games coming up this weekend. And let's start our programme with the big game on Sunday. Manchester City up against Arsenal. It's a 4:30 UK time kickoff. Couple of stats on this one. Of course, Man City lost in midweek against Newcastle. They've now dropped 16 points in their 24 Premier League games this season, having drawn twice. And now lost four times. They take on an Arsenal side who have lost 11 of their last 19 away games in the Premier League. Just one clean sheet in that run against Huddersfield Town last season. Right, Man City. I suppose you've enjoyed this, Ben, haven't you? The falling off of the perch of Manchester City. I know you were covering the Man United game in detail at the time Man City lost against Newcastle, but when you got the result in, of course, you've just seen United claw back in Ole Gunnar Solskjaer time a draw against Burnley. What was your reaction? Were you happy? Were you crowing?
Well, I was happy on one side of the coin, but then when you think that Liverpool were still to play on the Wednesday night, it's a difficult one for Man United fans because you're choosing between...
Whichever way you slice it, this season's not going to end well for you, is it?
It's not happening. We don't really want to push it towards Anfield, but obviously we don't want Man City to win it either. So it was a great thing for United fans at the end of that game when the result came through, because obviously we felt like we'd earned a slight victory from the position we'd got ourselves in with 8 minutes to go, and we'd finished the game. We're still unbeaten. Disappointing not to take all 3 points from the, you know, from the last 10 minutes of the game. I think if it had gone another few minutes longer, we might have done. But Burnley were fully deserving of the draw. But when the result came through that Newcastle had beaten Manchester City...
Yeah, I bet there was some cheer in Old Trafford when that happened.
Yeah, there was.
On the game itself, so Man City scored in, what, 26 seconds, I think it was, Sergio Aguero? 24, something like that. The quickest goal in the Premier League this season anyway. And then, did they get a bit complacent, Gabs? Is that what happened? Did they feel like the game was won at that point?
Possibly. But I think when that goal went in, I thought that's probably the best thing that could have happened if you're Newcastle, because then they have to kind of come out and actually play, because Newcastle don't really play, do they? They just, you know, they're five at the back, they sit back, they try and make it difficult, and they tend to start playing when they go behind. So it probably livened Newcastle up, maybe a bit of complacency from City. You would think then maybe if Newcastle opened up, they'd probably get picked off with a second or third, but it didn't happen. I think all of City's losses, have they been in front this season and ended up losing the four, or at least three of the four losses?
Very good question.
They were against,
and we've definitely done the research on it, but we'll leave that hanging out there for the audience to guess and tell them later.
Come back to me.
We
that
definitely
one,
but, know the answer to that. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, actually.
Really surprising that Newcastle were able to come back. Obviously, a fantastic victory for them, but you do fear for Arsenal going into this one with Man City, obviously. Smarting from that defeat. I was at the Arsenal Cardiff game in midweek, and they were woeful Arsenal. They got the victory, but they were really poor. So you're saying this is the big game of the weekend? I don't think this is a big game anymore.
You think walk over for Man City because Arsenal were so bad and City got a response?
I see City,
well, Arsenal got, I mean, they've just got no defenders, haven't
no.
they?
Mm.
They're all injured.
Well, I think they lined up with, they had Lichtsteiner, Monreal centre half, with Mustafi, I think, played.
Mustafi, yeah.
And then Kolasinac was left back, so it was, you know, really makeshift, lightweight. Even in the midfield area, it didn't seem quite right. Cardiff dominated in the midfield area as well.
So how did they win then?
I don't know.
This has happened a lot with Arsenal this year, hasn't it? They've been bad and won.
Cardiff had chances, they didn't take them. Second half, Iwobi came on. He improved Arsenal. He's probably been Arsenal's one of their best players.
Keeps getting taken off or brought on, doesn't he? Doesn't play 90 minutes in games.
Changed the dynamics of them a little bit. And what happened was what normally happens when you're a lesser side, you come up against a big team, you don't take your chances. Someone then does something stupid, makes a mistake. Bruno Manga gives a penalty away. Arsenal go in front. And then difficult to get back in the game. And Lacazette scores another fantastic individual goal. So that was that. But in so many departments, they got dominated. Cardiff played really well. They were a better team. You know, the Arsenal fans are turned. You know, it was quiet. They were moaning, but they got the job done. So if they play like that on the weekend against City, they'll get hammered.
I want to go back to Man City and the way they played against Newcastle. Ben, you've been involved in squads where you've been champions or you've been a team that have won a trophy and the next year they try and defend it, be it the Cup, be it the League, whatever. And we haven't seen a team defend a title in the Premier League for a decade. It'll be a decade this year if it doesn't get done. And I just want to ask you really what it's like being the coach and what it's like being in the squad when you know you should be playing at your absolute best, you feel like you're the champions, and yet it hasn't gone your way. Is it a lack of motivation? Is there something that's not quite right there with people like Kyle Walker, Fernandinho, making errors, not being in the same rhythm we used to? And why is it different now for Man City as opposed to last year? We watched the Amazon thing, we all watched it, when it seemed like Guardiola was pure focus and everyone was ready for it. And I don't know, when that winner went in for Newcastle, we just sort of sat down. I thought he was about to light a cigarette. Didn't seem that mither by it.
It's a great question. I mean, going back to my time at Manchester United, I think, you know, Sir Alex Ferguson famously, you know, every time that he won a title, he let himself have maybe a week to, you know, enjoy it. And then straight away, he was thinking for the next season. He was building for the next season. He got players in all the time. He was constantly evolving the club because he knew that winning it was hard, defending it was even more difficult. And I think that the problems that team have now, and when I say that the problems are good problems to have, because they're still good sides, is that the teams that are chasing them know that they've got bridges to gap, or gaps to bridge, I should say. Mm. And, you know, Sir Alex Ferguson did it in Jose Mourinho's first couple of seasons. He realised that Chelsea were dominating that Premier League and he had to find a way both physically and mentally to get through to his players what it needed to succeed to overtake this Chelsea side. And Chelsea won it for 2 years and then Man United regained the title back from them again. And I think that that's what it is. It's a mentality that coaches need to instil in these players that, you know, what Manchester City did last year, I said, wouldn't be repeated. Mm. I didn't think that that Liverpool would go and do the same thing, but I knew that teams would be a lot closer to them. And it's proving that this season. And the fact that they've already lost 4 games, I'm not so sure whether you can lose any more than about 5 or 6 in the Premier League and have aspirations of being champions these days. So are they going to go another, you know, what, 4 months completely unbeaten? I'm not so sure. And these other clubs have put them under pressure. And it isn't a surprise to me that City have crumbled. And maybe, like Daniel said, that is a little bit of complacency on their part as well.
I mean, eventually you do get found out, whoever you are as a team. We're going to talk Chelsea later. And after about 10 games, everyone was like, right, get on Jorginho. And Bournemouth, to great effect, achieved a brilliant victory on Wednesday by doing that. I look at Man City's side against Newcastle. Everyone was there last season, at the start of last season as well. Look at their bench, and it's only Riyad Mahrez of those subs who wasn't there last year. Are they trying to play the same football as last year? And teams like Newcastle, they tried this tactic last year and, of course, they got a lot of criticism for it. It didn't work for them. They had like 6% possession or something mad like that. But this year it's worked. Our teams, have they worked out Man City? Have they not changed enough? Is that the problem?
I think it's more competitive. The league's more competitive this year. I think it's going to be harder and harder for teams to retain titles and win titles just because of the amount of money that's in the Premier League now. All the teams from top to bottom are able to spend money. I mean, you've seen, I know that Fulham have been poor this season, but they spent 100 million. So when you're getting money to spend, you're able to improve your squad. I think it just improves the whole competitiveness of the league as well. I'm really surprised that City have lost as many games as they had. And they do kind of play that kind of perfect football, I suppose. So they have to kind of be spot on with it. Pep's so demanding with how he wants them to play. I think you look at Liverpool and they've almost grounded out a lot of their results this season and not always been at their best and able to get victories. So it's a surprise. It's difficult. I mean, United are one of the few teams that have been able to do over the years, kind of retain the Premier League. It is really difficult. Teams maybe do find you out a bit. Is the motivation, are the hunger levels the same the following season? Did they freshen up the squad enough? Probably not. I think you said Mahrez is probably the only signing that kind of came in.
He's not getting the team either.
Exactly.
He can't improve on perfection, either. Maybe.
Trying to keep the whole kind of squad happy is a difficult one.
It's like putting pineapple on a pizza. Pizza is already perfect. You don't need. You can't improve it anymore.
Yeah,
Mahrez is like the pineapple of Man City. You having that? You don't like it? Dave doesn't like my little comparison.
I'm a big fan of pineapple and pizza.
Are you? Yeah. There's so much wrong with your life. We need to sort you out.
It's such a tiresome thing to pick on as well, isn't it? Some
is
people
it?
Just like pineapple on pizzas, mate.
And that's wrong.
It.
Sweet and savoury shouldn't go together. Yeah. I don't put my strawberry
yeah,
in the sandwich.
Mahrez is a Premier League title winner. And some people like pineapple on pizzas.
Yeah, yeah, all of that is very strange to me. All of that's odd. Back to this game. Man City against Arsenal. The City defence, there's been some issues in recent times. They were bad goals to concede, actually, against Newcastle. I mean, Gabs, you've been a Premier League defender. The first one, the ball is looping in the area. No one's attacking it. The second one, you know, Fernandinho's made an error, but what's the pass into him from old one-leg Danilo? Like, what's he going to do with that Fernandinho running back towards his own goal at full pace? He doesn't deal with it well, but the defensive errors there, and they're coming up against, fair enough, they've got no defenders themselves, Arsenal, but they've got Aubameyang, who continues to score. His record is just ridiculous. So many great stats on his kind of goal-scoring record since his Premier League debut. Him and Lacazette have combined for 7 Arsenal goals in the competition, 2 more than any other duo. He scored, like, 100 goals or something.
28 and 44,
28
isn't it?
And 44.
It's a year today since he signed.
Which is mad. Yeah. Just a mad amount of goals that he's actually scored. So there's a chance for Arsenal to at least score a couple of goals, right? This could be a bit of an end-to-end affair. You don't
yes.
think so, do you?
Well, like, judging from the game in midweek, the ease in which Cardiff got in behind an Arsenal back four as well. It was just a simple run in between a centre-back and a full-back and a ball played down the side. And
it was the same for Man United
yeah,
in the FA Cup, wasn't
Mustafi
it, last week?
Just
yeah.
not wanting to go out in those areas, didn't want to, you know, get involved in a foot race with anyone. And, you know, if that's going to happen against City, then it's going to be a long afternoon for them. But I think it all depends where Aubameyang plays as well. I mean, against Cardiff, he played in a two with Lacazette. They played a diamond. The game that we covered here...
he goes the wing for a while, didn't he?
He played right wing. I know he scored, but he spent most of the time kind of tracking back and defending his own box. So I can't see Emery playing both of them at front against Man City, and you might see him deployed on the right-hand side again, where he's less effective for me.
Any chance, briefly, for this one?
I don't think so.
City win, easy peasy.
Aubameyang against United in the FA Cup was stuck out on the wing. I know he scored the goal, but other than that, I genuinely did not even remember that he was on the park. Yeah. I think he needs to be more central.
Man City manager Pep Guardiola has never lost a match against Unai Emery. They've played each other several times, 7 wins and 4 draws. The only manager he's faced more during his managerial career without losing is, no one's going to get this, Joaquin Caparrós. 13 games out in Spanish football for the likes of Deportivo, Bilbao, Sevilla. Everyone would have got it, I'm sure, but we are out of time. Going to move on next to Liverpool, who are top of the table, but nervous in January. What?
Go the head, headed away by Chilwell, and the referee blows the whistle. It's going to be all over. It is all over, and it's Liverpool 1, Leicester City 1. So if you look at it from a negative point of view, Liverpool failing to increase the gap on Manchester City.
Right, let's talk Monday night football. West Ham United up against Liverpool, an 8 o'clock UK time kickoff. Here's a stat I'm looking forward to giving you. West Ham have lost their last 4 Premier League matches against Liverpool, conceding exactly 4 times in each. 0-4, 1-4, 1-4, 0-4. Not feeling that confident
watching this
about
from behind
this
the sofa, aren't you, on Monday night, I think?
I'll be watching it in the stands, I'm afraid.
Oh,
I'm going with the fans, with the lads to this one, because it's my birthday next week. This is my present. This is my present, tickets to the West Ham game. Thanks, guys.
Do they not like you very much?
I don't think anyone likes me very much, to be honest. It's an issue with my personality, to be fair. But let's talk about Liverpool first. West Ham, a bit of a sideline for this one, because Jordan Henderson has said they need to bounce back against West Ham from their performance against Leicester City on Wednesday. It was a game I was covering for TalkSport's international feed. And I thought Leicester had the better of the chances. And also, after scoring early, like 2 minutes and a couple of seconds for Sadio Mane, Liverpool looked quite nervy. They almost reverted into themselves and didn't create many more chances from that point. It's a bit early for feeling like nervous about the title race. I mean, they could have gone 7 clear, but it's still 4. And we've still got, 14 games to go? Something like that. It's bizarre.
Yeah, it is. It's way too early to start talking about where the title's heading just at this moment in time. And you thought that it wasn't just the fact that they scored after a couple of seconds. I think Leicester had actually touched the ball once in that time. Liverpool had kept the ball, and yes, it was a little bit of a lucky ricochet and it broke to Sadio Mane, but it was a really, really good finish. But after that, I agree with you, Tom, they got very nervy. And I think Leicester capitalised on this, and they, you know, the goalkeeper didn't help him at times. Alisson, he was nearly caught by Vardy.
Distribution was terrible.
Distribution from the floor, which is, you know, one of the reasons why they go and pay such big money for these goalkeepers these days. He'd already put a stray pass out towards Henderson that was intercepted. So yeah, they grew in confidence, Leicester, and the goal was coming. And in the second half, they had chances, and Liverpool were unexpectedly carved quite wide open at times, and Leicester didn't manage to put the ball in the back of the net. But similarly, Liverpool didn't look like scoring, and I thought Salah and Firmino were pretty much non-existent in the second half.
They were quiet, weren't they? Firmino had one chance early on in the first half, where it was a good save, but apart from that, not a great deal. But it was a game that suited Leicester. Like when they played Chelsea, like when they played City from earlier in the season, where they were able to counter attack on Liverpool, and they used the pace of Vardy very well, and they probably should have got more out of the game, really. And this is a small point. I mean, it's the same for both teams, but with Liverpool being the team more dominant in possession in the first half, especially. The snow that came down, it looked like it was affecting them. Like the ball wasn't running very quickly,
this,
you know.
Wasn't he?
Yeah.
The storm that came about 10 minutes before kickoff, and all the players ran off midway through their kind of shooting drills or whatever, was so bad that I actually thought they might delay the game, because there was really big, like, balls of hail. And they played through that in the first half. It wasn't rolling that well, so that might be an excuse. But the second half, didn't the Liverpool team around it kind of clear the pitch on one
Most
side
of it, yeah.
and not the other side? So, that, I mean, that was some proper cheeky stuff from Liverpool. Are they allowed to do that? Just help out their own team and just kind of sweep one half and not the other? Is that morally wrong? Did it annoy anyone else? I thought it was a bit off, to be fair.
Not the same as having the ball boys with a towel
with the
for
towels,
somebody with
yeah,
a long
I was
throw?
Thinking that, yeah.
Don't agree with that either.
All right, okay.
No
yeah.
towels allowed. Not in my game. Not when I get the Premier League job.
To be fair to them as well, they should have had a penalty.
Yeah.
Liverpool.
Peter. Yes.
Yeah.
But, I mean...
Can I just say something on that?
I think I know what you're going to say.
Can I say something on that, right? Now,
Liverpool, what you sow, perhaps.
Liverpool have cried wolf, you're absolutely right, for weeks and weeks. And maybe one of them was a penalty for the various Salah dives, but not all of them. In the game, in the first half, Salah ran at Maguire's arm, ran into it, and then he was like, oh, penalty! Wasn't given. In the second half, there's a bouncing ball in the penalty area. Virgil van Dijk, of all people, had a terrible game, I thought, across the 90. Felt a little nudge. He goes down. It's a penalty! It's a penalty! And then when it finally comes around... It looks like a penalty on the replay, absolutely. I probably would have given it. However, on the first viewing, Naby Keita's got all his feet muddled up. He's going with the wrong foot. He should have toe poked with the left and tried to hit it with the right. So he's already in a muddle. And now Martin Atkinson goes, well, they keep diving here. And I know they keep diving. And my colleagues have been embarrassed by Liverpool. And that moment of doubt, I genuinely think cost them there, because that probably was a penalty.
But what's worrying for me is that Peter Walton, who was in the BT studio looking at it, must have seen it five or six times and still came back when they went to him and said it wasn't a penalty. So even though, you know, Martin Atkinson probably did think that, and if he isn't sure, he can't give it. It was a penalty with the benefit of VAR or a replay that Peter Walton had, and like I said, must have watched five or six times, and he still said it was the correct decision not to give the penalty, which
that
was
is the
totally
issue,
wrong.
Isn't it, with it, like, it's still going to the opinion of someone else and they can still get it wrong. What I liked about the World Cup, why it worked well, because the ref went off the pitch and actually...
Well, they're meant to. That's what would happen. Is that in the FA Cup, they kind of got it wrong where they were telling them what happened. They are meant to go look if they want to overturn it.
Yeah, and I think that's why it worked better. But I thought it was a penalty, but I agree with you, Tom. I think he probably should have got the shot away before that anyway. Like, why is he going with the outside of his right foot in the first place? It was a left-footed kind of strike.
Yeah.
Probably sums up Keita's season a little bit. He hasn't quite... hit the heights yet, has he? But yeah, Liverpool were, I think the last three games now, they've looked a bit off the pace. Brighton, they struggled. Palace. They got the job done.
Yep, should have got done.
But we're open.
But then Spironi gave him two.
Yeah, he threw one in, didn't he? So I think they've looked a little bit nervous the last three games. And I think it might be time maybe to go back to the tried and trusted kind of more of the 4-3-3 with Salah on the right hand side. Because I think they've had a period where that kind of 4-2-3-1 has kind of worked with Salah through the middle. But as Ben said there, I think it does leave them open a little bit as well in that midfield area. And they've been so good defensively throughout the season, you know, with those three in the middle at times, stopping counter-attacks. But I just think when they play with a two, and Salah sometimes playing through the middle, he doesn't find maybe as much space as he normally would, and they just look a bit more vulnerable defensively now, I would say. Obviously, injuries haven't helped. Henderson playing right back was a a strange one for me when Fabinho starts his career as a right back, you know, in Brazil.
Yeah,
so he
is
knows
a right
how to
back.
Play there, yeah. So you would have thought he would play there. He didn't.
And they got rid of Klein.
Got rid of Klein, which I think, obviously, the player wanted to go. But surely, as a manager, you say, look, I'm sorry.
Can't go, mate.
You can't go. Mm. I need, you know, my right backs are injured. You stay here. He actually played a couple of games before he went and actually played quite well.
Gets so that, Man U, that's I think he played.
That's,
yes.
a really, that's a strange one as well. But
all this being said, though, can we see West Ham doing what Leicester did?
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Can we? I mean,
you know what? I actually can. Yeah. I actually can see West Ham getting something from this game. Why? Because this is the most quintessential West Ham season. They've beaten Man U, they've beaten Arsenal, they went out in the cup to a League One side. Injuries everywhere.
Bottom of
Star
League
strikers
one,
injured. Yeah, I know, mate. I was in Wimbledon at the time. Don't bring it up. Okay, it was a tough night for me. I had to buy a lot of drinks for people. This is such a quintessential West Ham season. I mean, you've been involved in a few of those chaotic years, Gabs. I mean. Yeah. I just wouldn't discount it. I genuinely wouldn't. Only because this is what West Ham
do.
This is what they do. I think they've been caught up in recent times because they've had 10 players out for so long now. And all these guys have played a lot of minutes, a lot of games. They all look knackered. Bonner's gone anyway in the mind. Masuaku never had one.
Masuaku, that left side partnership is nothing short of disgrace.
But when you don't have Cresswell, has been playing quite well, you don't have Valbuena. I mean, you know, we've joked about Wilshere, but they did plan for him to play more than five games. You know, it's just caught up with him, I think. Yeah. I think that's what's happened in recent weeks. I still think they'll get 45 points and it won't be a disaster.
A lot of his signings as well are injured, which doesn't help, I think.
I mean, it was essentially Yarmolenko, last year's team, wasn't it, against Wolves?
Yarmolenko getting injured. Obviously, Wilshere, Valbuena, as you said, doesn't help, but if they play a 4-4-2 against Liverpool, I can't see them getting anything. I think, yes, injuries have been a problem. Defensively, I think they probably conceded the most goals in the Premier League. I think, or they're close to,
I think,
West
it is from set pieces, they're the highest, I think.
They've conceded a lot of goals. So, for me, you can look at the manager and say, okay, yes, we've got injuries, but we have to be a bit more difficult to beat maybe in this period then when we don't have our players. So, for me, it'd be 4-5-1 against Liverpool. You know, you put three in the middle. Noble, as Tom struggles to play in a two at times, particularly when there's a lot of games close together.
When you get behind him, you can't catch him.
No.
And he doesn't play deep enough.
Yeah, he lacks a bit of mobility. So I think you put three in the middle, two, Anderson one side, I don't know, Antonio the other side.
But the creativity isn't there, isn't that the thing? Yeah, Arnautović, Marco Arnautović, you notice this? So West Ham are losing the game. They got so bossed by Wolves, really impressed by Wolves. You know, don't want to take that away from them, but West Ham are terrible. They're losing the game. Arnautović, with all the, oh, I'm back, everyone. Well, where did you go? You were literally just at home. So I'm not sure you should be announcing you're back 20 minutes after a cup knockout. But he gets that kick on the foot and it's like, oh, God, he's broken his foot. It's over. He's got a Neymar. It's a metatarsal broken. Just a bruise. Might even play in this game. It's a day out, but might play. Just a bruise. Just didn't fancy it, did he? Didn't fancy it. What am I doing here? If you really wanted to play the rest of that game and he really wants to come back and play for West Ham on Monday, he could. But we know he doesn't. And it's a bit the similar story for people like Hernandez, who's been ill a few times this year. Give me 100 grand a week. I can't make it. Don't fancy it this week. And there's a lot of that goes around at that club, unfortunately.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you, to be honest with you.
You were there, mate.
I was there. I've seen it firsthand. So, I think it's a difficult one. Difficult one for West Ham. Unless they go a bit more defensive and just try and dig out a result, I can only see Liverpool kind of getting back to winning ways with this.
Maybe.
One.
But you never know. It's my birthday. They might surprise
me.
Listen, I want to get to Leicester, Manchester United. We've got a bit of time to do that now, so let's do it right now. Let's talk about Man U. We've mentioned them a little bit across the programme. On Wednesday against Burnley, Ben, of course, you were there covering the game. Probably the worst performance of the Ole Gunnar Solskjaer reign. Defensively looked a little bit disorganised. Pereira made a few errors. I'm not too sure we'll be seeing too much of that repeated in the centre midfield. What went wrong in the game for you and what went right in the game?
Well, obviously, what went right was the fact that they didn't give up. It was like it was characteristic of teams of old under Sir Alex Ferguson. You know, 2-0 down didn't look really like scoring, and they managed to salvage a draw out of it. So they certainly need commending on that. But they didn't play the game how they'd approach the game like they'd done in previous matches. Spurs, Arsenal, Spurs especially in the first half when they kept Martial and Rashford high, caused real problems, did the same with Arsenal, and played on the counter-attack, but played with people coming up behind them like Pogba, which we hadn't seen. And fair play to Burnley. They had a game plan. They stuck with it. It was a terrible goal to give away the first one. I mean, yeah. Phil Jones has played the ball into Pereira. Yeah, it wasn't a great ball, but he had time and he just panicked. And at Man United, any team in the Premier League, you've got, when you receive the ball, you've got to know what's around you, and you've got to know what you're going to do with it, and you need to be good enough and have the quality to deal with it. He was shoved off the ball easily by Jack Cork, who I thought on the night was about the best player, and I think it's been a really good signing for Burnley. And he didn't panic. Phil Jones sort of pirouetted, which gave him the time to see Ashley Barnes coming up on his inside, and he smashed the ball home. And the second one was the defence not pushing out. It was just a ball that they're always going to play. Volks, Barnes,
maybe Wood. Peter Crouch this week.
They're all of a similar ilk and a similar size, and he has a way to play Sean Dyche. And last year it worked. It hasn't done so much this year, but in recent matches they have done quite well. And I thought they were good value, Burnley, and United didn't go at it with pace as they had done.
Just want to take you back to Man U. We mentioned Burnley a bit more later. Lukaku and Rashford. Rashford starting up front looks fantastic. Lukaku comes in the cup game and set up both goals. Then they play together. Can they play together?
Well, it didn't seem like it the other night. I think that Romelu Lukaku this season has had his critics, no question. And he went with a game plan against Arsenal that worked with Lukaku sort of on one side. But for me, I would still prefer to have the sheer pace of the likes of Anthony Martial, who I know wasn't available, but I'm pretty sure that he will probably revert back to the three of Lingard, with Pogba just coming up behind Rashford and Martial for the game against Leicester on Sunday. That's what's been tried and tested so far in most of these nine games that they've had, and they've been hugely successful with it, and look a different side and a more potent team.
I like Lingard through the middle. I like him through the middle. I think it worked in the cup with Lukaku on the right.
He's often looked good in that role. Remember when he was at Everton? Martinez used to play him. I think it was when he was on loan, first of all. He used to play him sort of off the right, and he's often done well there.
They had him running that way instead of him coming short and trying to link play, which he struggles with a bit. He probably doesn't use his physical attributes as much as he should. He was actually the counter-attacking threat. He was cheating a bit on the right. They were getting the ball to him, and he was driving, using his pace, which I think is his main strength, really, getting in behind people. So, the Lingard, Martial, Rashford kind of combination is the prime.
It's made more sense in recent times. Briefly on Leicester, we've mentioned him a few times during the programme. They just do better against better teams. It's so bizarre. They can't beat Newport County, but they can beat Man City and get a great point against Liverpool. And this could be a real chance for them. And do you know what? Just quickly on Claude Puel as well. All the Leicester fans in the office that I speak to talk about how much they dislike him. He doesn't show the passion with an SH. And he does. You should have seen him on the touchline at Anfield. He's screaming at everyone. He's right into it.
You saw that, the shot, which was a TV director's dream against Wolves, with their head in the hands when they conceded the fourth goal in the last minute. He certainly cares.
Yeah.
But I think his nature, when he's interviewed and stuff, I mean, maybe it's not his first language. He's not a tub thumping sort of. He's not Jurgen Klopp or anything like that. No. He's not a big personality, but of course he cares.
He's a good manager as well. I don't get why. I'll never get it. Let's not do that discussion again. I don't get it. Let's move on. Next up, let's talk Tottenham up against Newcastle United.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
They needed a win here tonight, and they've got a win here tonight. Some of the players dropped to their knees on the floor. Son is back and scored. Llorente got the winner, and Tottenham managed to take advantage of Chelsea's collapse at Bournemouth.
12:30 UK time on Saturday. Tottenham take on Newcastle United at Wembley. I'm expecting at least 100 fans to turn up. I'm not sure yet. We'll get someone on the turnstiles to count them in and count them out again.
60,000 empty seats at Wembley on Wednesday.
But was that a licensing thing? Because I know that, you know, they can only have like 90 or 80, but still it was...
I mean, it's one of the coldest nights of the year. It was playing Watford. You know, they could be forgiven, yeah, I think, the Spurs.
Can they be forgiven, though?
I think they're fed up. They're just fed up at
this
Wembley.
This is so true. Yeah. Listeners outside the country might not understand this as much, but it's a long journey. It's tough to get to Wembley. It's not your home ground. It's always a pain getting out of. Like, you're always in that queue getting to the station for ages and ages. And they just don't want to be there anymore. Yeah. And when Everton change their ground coming up soon, the Premier League need to write in a rule of some sort of punishment for not going to the ground on the date you say. Because, you know, not only, I've said a few times about it being fair for other teams this year, and I do think that, but also it's not fair on the supporters who paid for season tickets somewhere, they're not going, and you get this kind of, well, it don't really matter anymore, which is what a lot of Tottenham fans would have felt about midweek. It's very, very annoying. I wonder how many turn up against Newcastle at 12:30, which for a lot of fans in this country at least, it's the worst kickoff time. Because you don't get to go out beforehand. The wife wants you back by three, or your husband, whatever, wants you back for the afternoon. So you can't have a nice day out with the lads, having a few pints or anything like that.
And you've got to watch Newcastle.
And you've got to watch Newcastle as well, who may well play terrible and get something like they did against City a few days ago. And that's how they're going to play, Gabs, isn't it? They're exactly the same way. Five at the back, else defending too.
They won't change, particularly off the back of getting a result against Man City. I think, you know, you have to give kind of credit to Rafa. He finds a way of getting the job done, keeping Newcastle in the league. He is the reason why they will stay in the Premier League for another season. But it's not great to watch if you're a Newcastle fan. I mean, we're talking about West Ham there and saying their season's done. What is there to look forward to? It's almost a bit similar with Newcastle, I suppose, because you're not going and seeing kind of great football if you're a Newcastle fan. They're not going to obviously challenge for winning the Premier League. They're not probably going to go down. It's a bit, you know, you're not even, you're paying your money.
Do you think they're
really
out of it now then, 24
anything.
Points with those wins?
I think they'll do enough. They're not out of it yet, but they're going to do enough. They're going to win enough games, I think, you know, with the way Rafa plays. But they're going to go to Tottenham. They're going to be difficult to beat. If they go behind then, they might try and have a go. Rondon, to be fair, has been in good form for them, I have to say. He could cause problems for Tottenham if he gets the right service. I think, you know, if Davinson Sanchez plays, I think he's certainly someone who can be bullied. But it was a big win for Tottenham, actually, to kind of keep them slightly in the title race. That was a big comeback against Watford. So
title race? That was surprising.
Well,
it's 7 points.
You can't really rule them out yet, can you?
I thought we had. Are they back in it now?
Well, I think it's the same as what it was a few weeks ago. If City are still in it, Tottenham are just about in it. Obviously, not quite as much, but
interesting.
You know, they still. I saw them play against Palace on Sunday, and they weren't very good. I mean, they had a by their standards a weakened team. Skip, I felt a bit sorry for him. He had a lot of the ball, but he looked maybe a little bit overawed by the whole situation. You know, Llorente got a goal against Watford.
He can head it, can't he? He can't pass it, but he can head it. But
having Son back last night was a huge thing for them. Yeah. He can just about make up for the absence of Ali and Kane if he's on his Son every day.
As a former winger, Ben, you must love to watch Heung-min Son.
Brilliant. Yeah, brilliant. I mean, the last time, when United played them a few weeks ago, they had Ali, Son and Kane all playing, and the following match neither of the three of them were involved, but Son is extremely excited. I actually think he's more of an asset to them than either of the other two.
I think
he's absolutely brilliant. He's quick. He can beat players. He's strong. He's powerful. He can run in behind. He can come short, and he can score you he can score great goals. I think he's a huge player for Spurs to have back at this stage of the season.
Does South Korea have a tournament every 6 weeks? Now, what's he going to go to next?
I know.
He's going to go judge a pie eating contest next. Get someone else. Get another player, South Korea. You've had your Son time. Anyway, let's move on. Chelsea against Huddersfield is 3 o'clock UK time on Saturday. Chelsea looking to avoid three consecutive Premier League defeats for the first time since 2015, November that year. Their biggest defeat in the Premier League since 1996, when they were thumped 5-1 by Liverpool back then, way before the Abramovich era, so way before many of you ever supported Chelsea. Get in there! Right. What did Chelsea do? How does he motivate these players to play against Huddersfield? Why can't he motivate these players? They've down tools again, haven't they?
Well, I mean, I didn't see the game, but I mean that was the biggest scoreline in terms of, you know, eye opening of the week. I mean, for Bournemouth who play good stuff, and Eddie Howe's done a great job there, but I saw some of the goals and they were completely carved open. Chelsea, they're lacking a centre forward as well, which is not helping matters. They don't have a focal point.
Higuain didn't do very much, did he, in that 60 minutes before he got subbed?
And some of the big players that they've got out there, and obviously they didn't perform, but they're not performing as regularly as they did last season to their capabilities.
I was at Stamford Bridge last Thursday for the Carabao Cup semi-final, and they were great.
Giroud?
They could have blown Tottenham out of the water in the first half, and they eventually went on to win on penalties. But, you know, and I was at the previous week, I was at the Emirates to see them humiliated by Arsenal, and they were terrible. Mm. I mean, they are...
So what's going on? You'll know. You've been at more games than all of us. What is happening?
I don't know. They're really flaky. Like, they've got it in them to go out and, I mean, they probably will beat Huddersfield. Huddersfield are the worst team around. But, you know, they're only one week away from a brilliant performance or a terrible performance.
Like when they beat City.
It doesn't seem to be any in between. Yeah.
Yeah. I think they lack leadership, me. I think you look on the pitch, how many leaders do they really have on the field of play? Obviously, since losing the likes of Lampard and John Terry, who were massive players for the club. I look at that team and just think, who would patrol things there? You know, when the team goes behind, who's going to like kind of galvanise the players and get them going? Azpilicueta, maybe. I know he's the captain, but I don't really see him as being the most kind of vocal. I think they just lack a dominant kind of leader in their
team. Someone to stop Willian from sulking.
He just always looks like he's sulking.
You don't fancy anymore Pedro. You don't fancy anymore Hazard. Get it up, yeah.
Yeah, but I think... at times they have problems with and without the ball. So they, as Ben said, they're quite open on the turnover with Jorginho playing. His lack of mobility doesn't really protect two centre-halves for me.
You know who should be playing there, didn't you? Don't do it.
Well,
move on.
For me, in Luiz and Rudiger, they have two centre-backs who are not top four quality for me. So if you're going to play with two centre-halves there like that, you need someone patrolling in front who can kind of cut out those counter-attacks even before they get to the two centre-backs. They don't have that in Jorginho. It lacks mobility. And I think with the ball, at times, they're just too intricate.
Yeah.
They don't go in behind enough. Everything's in front of teams and it's in Hazard trying to look for a 1-2. And
I think one of the big problems is they've employed a manager who probably needs a season or two at least to... properly get his philosophy, get the players in and out and build the team that, like he had at Napoli, that could challenge Juventus like they did in his third season, I think.
Second or third year.
But Chelsea, that is not the right fit for Chelsea.
Yeah.
Chelsea are a club that employ managers who can come in and win titles in the first seasons and then it all goes to pot.
Yeah.
I don't think he'll get the time to do what he needs to do.
They won't lose to Huddersfield Town. Huddersfield should just forfeit all their points.
What points?
Well, exactly right. It wouldn't change the league at all, actually, if they forfeited their points. But still, they should. But if they lose in the coming weeks, bigger games, tougher tasks, do we think that Maurizio Sarri... let's say Chelsea... I mean, I think it dropped down to sixth now.
Manchester United in the FA Cup.
Man United coming up in the Cup. They've got the Carabao Cup final coming up in February as well. Fifth. They lose those games. They lose a couple of big league games.
They've slipped out of the top four now as well.
On goals conceded, I think.
Is it because of the fourth?
Yeah.
Do we see him lasting the season, Sarri?
Well,
if he doesn't finish in the top four...
no chance.
I don't think so, no.
No, he could be gone. could be gone. I mean, after the game, apparently...
If you lose to Huddersfield at the weekend, I mean, it's not beyond the realms of possibility. I don't think that will happen,
Bournemouth
though.
The Bournemouth game, apparently, he was... he threw all his staff out of the dressing room and locked him in. 40 minutes he was talking to his players.
And what's he saying to him in there? What is that about?
I think he can only be saying, look, are you with me or not? You know, that's not acceptable. Are you with me? Are you believing in what I'm trying to do? Because if not, then I'm going to have to ship a few of you out. Or I'm going to be gone. I don't know.
To bring it back to your original point as well, what would be fascinating is to see which of those players went back at him and said what they said, if any. Yeah.
Some must have done, right? Some players in there, the senior players, like you say, absolutely right. One of them, I mean, surely Eden Hazard must have gone. He can speak for the attacking players. I mean, can Higuain say anything? Hasn't he been there a week? Does he sit there quietly?
I think so.
What does Jorginho say? The team runs through him. And is someone in that dressing room saying, look, all they did was put Josh King 5 or 10 yards behind the back of Jorginho, so when he got it, he could close him down, and when he didn't have it, he was in that little pocket to create things. It was kind of obvious from the start that's what they were doing, and they didn't react to it. Is someone standing up? Is N'Golo Kante, lovely man that he is, does he stop massaging everyone and making him a sandwich for a couple of minutes?
There's no way
to get up and say, there's no way this guy's not doing it.
No, he wouldn't.
He's not.
He wouldn't.
But as a professional, but he's a professional though. Yeah. And if they're having a discussion, look, guys, I mean, he's the most successful guy in the room.
But you need someone to do it for him.
Do you think?
Which I think is what. Yeah, because I think if you've read anything about N'Golo Kante, he is one of the most shy and retiring, humble guys around. He's not someone who's going to stand up to his manager, I don't think.
But what if he's asked? What if Sarri said, can you tell me, please, because you... Would he have asked him? Is that bizarre that the manager might have said to him, you're the guy with the most impressive CV here. What are we doing wrong? You've played every game. Tell me.
I think Sarri's the kind of guy that probably doesn't want to hear your opinion too much. It's Sarri ball. This is what we're doing. It's my way.
He said as much in public.
If you don't, It's you that are not doing things right, or the mentality is wrong, or you don't believe in what I'm doing. I think he's a coach that, you know, believes in what he's doing and expects the players to get on board with it. And if they don't, or if a result goes the wrong way, it's the players haven't listened or haven't shown the right mentality. So we've seen if your managers don't do it, they get sacked. So he needs a couple of results quickly.
Strange old story that. Briefly on Huddersfield, they are in the midst of an 8-month pre-season building up to August in the Championship. Do you see them doing anything different for this game? Actually, against Everton, they lost the game, but they created 10 chances in the match. I just assume someone was counting them wrong. Well, they tried to get forward. Yeah, they tried to do it. There was some positivity about Jan Sievert. What a quiz question he'll be in a few years.
But they've got nobody who can put the ball in the back of the net. And we've had this discussion so many occasions.
You've been through this, haven't you?
And it is a shame. You know, they're one of my old clubs, and I wish them well dearly. And I thought they did extremely well to stay up last year. But it's proving a hurdle too far. And I think they've already need now to start building for next season.
And they are. They've just signed a striker from Charlton in League One. Yeah, and that's the signing for next season, isn't it?
Says it all. Tough game for Huddersfield. Chelsea got to bounce back. I'm sure they will. 5 more games to get through. Stay with us.
It may fall here for Mendes. Lang in the penalty area. Can he get his shot away? Yes, he can. What a finish by Nathaniel Mendes Lang. Beautifully placed into the bottom right-hand corner. And Cardiff do have a goal back.
Right, 5 more games in the Premier League to get through. The feature game at 5:30 UK time on Saturday is Cardiff City up against Bournemouth. The first game at the Cardiff City Stadium since the disappearance of recently signed striker Emiliano Sala. The player, along with pilot David Ibbotson, were in a plane travelling from Nantes to Cardiff when it went missing from radar and are still yet to be recovered at the time of recording. The search continues in the English Channel, being paid for by fundraisers from around the world to find out what happened. Danny Gabbidon, former Cardiff City player, manager. Of course, you were at the game in midweek when there was a moment of reflection before the game at Emirates Stadium. Some lovely tributes there as well. Look, it has been such a horrible time for everyone involved in Cardiff City. I thought Neil Warnock's press conference was very engaging and very interesting to hear him talk on such a human level about what had happened. He spoke to this guy for the last 8 to 10 weeks, and it's obviously hit him very personally. How did they handle all of that against Arsenal? And what was the performance like? Because this is going to be a very different sort of thing, because now it's in front of their home fans. And, you know, they know him but never saw him play. It's such an odd situation for everyone to be in, a sad one as well.
Yeah, it is an odd situation. I think only one or two of the players actually got to actually talk to Emiliano. As you said, obviously Neil spoke to him over a number of weeks trying to get the deal done. But, you know, once a player kind of signs on the dotted line, I think as a teammate then in that dressing room, you're looking forward to the player coming into the club and, you know, hopefully making your team better and helping you to stay in the Premier League and do really well for the club. But then you're also looking forward to getting to know the person as well and seeing what he's all about. And obviously that wasn't able to happen. So the way Cardiff City kind of conducted themselves all the way through the week, really, you know, the fans, Mehmet Dalman, Ken Chu, Neil Warnock, the players, was fantastic. And it's probably one of their best performances, I would say, of the season against
the Arsenal game. Yeah.
They played really well. They created good chances in the first half. Just the old problem again of not sticking it in the back of the net. I don't think they've been ahead at half time in any game this season so far. But they certainly deserve to be in that one. And you just felt then that Arsenal were going to improve second half, which they did. And they gave a penalty away, and then it was difficult then for them to get back into the game. But, you know, if they take that kind of game plan and the positivity that they showed into the game this weekend against Bournemouth, then you're more than capable of picking up a result, which they need to, because I think it's four maybe without a win now for Cardiff.
It could potentially, it's going to be a tough afternoon for those players, for Warnock, for everyone in the stadium. Like you say, it's, you know, echoes of the Leicester City thing, but very different at the same time because of the circumstances of you never actually playing, never actually being part of the club properly. But it could be a galvanising moment for Cardiff if they get together and they use it as some sort of motivation and they get a win. You know, it could really spur them on for the rest of the season. But it's going to be difficult because they've got so many problems to deal with. They've got the human tragedy of this is the main thing and the hardest thing for anyone to deal with. But if it happened to any one of us and we had some sort of tragedy in our personal lives, we could have some time off work to deal with it or whatever. You can't do that in this situation. They've got to play these games. They've got to get the points they need to stay up in the Premier League. They've also got the added pressure of needing a striker. That's why he was there. They need someone to come and score goals. And they got, as we record this, less than 12 hours to do so if they want to find one. They're not going to get any special dispensation, which has been talked about, but that's not going to happen. So it's a tough situation against a team who have just battered Chelsea and will be full of confidence. But if they can win this game, it could be huge, absolutely huge for them.
I like Umar Nias. I'm going to come out and say it right now. I like him as a kind of chaos striker. He is one of those guys.
He works so hard.
Every time I've watched him play, I've not seen too many strikers just run that much. He runs himself so hard in games. And I think he will score goals for Cardiff. I don't know if he'll score as many goals that they need to keep him up, but I think he will score goals. I think that's quite a shrewd acquisition. You're not so sure?
No. look, I think he suits Cardiff in so many ways. His attributes, as you say, you know, he works hard. His hold-up play was excellent, actually, against Arsenal. Mustafi really struggled to deal with his physicality and his running power. He did a lot of work for the team, but that, in a way, was a small problem as well because he was in wide areas a lot of the time. And, you know, when the ball was then going in the box, he wasn't the guy to stick it away. I mean, Bobby Reid had two great chances, and if Nias was on the end of either of them, it might have been a different outcome. So it's just the way Cardiff play. They don't create that much. So it's going to be difficult for him to score goals, I think, in this team. But he does bring a lot of positivity. And he did play well against Arsenal. Yeah. But he needs a bit better service, I think.
Big chance for a victory against Bournemouth, who have lost their last six away Premier League games, conceding at least two times in each of those games. They've not been on a worse run away from home in the Football League since October 1994. Maybe that's why Eddie Howe doesn't get the call from the likes of Arsenal. I don't know. Let's talk about Burnley, who take on Southampton, 3 o'clock UK time on Saturday. Southampton missed the chance to move away from those relegation places against Crystal Palace in midweek, a 1-1 draw, which didn't really help either of those two teams that much.
Pretty big game, this.
Huge game, but let's talk Burnley. Of course, you watched them, Ben Thornley, against Man United. They're the team who sit just outside the relegation places right now, with Southampton and Palace climbing above them. And it's a game in Burnley's current form. I don't know, do you make them favourites? What's your assessment of this one?
I think if it was last season, you would have done. It was a really, really tough place to go, Turf Moor, last year. They made it a bit of a fortress, and obviously they finished in the Europa League places. That's how good of a season that they did have. When people expect them to kick on this season, it never happened, which, you know, invariably does happen. But recently, they've won sort of four out of the last six and lost and drawn. Obviously, they lost with a much changed side in the FA Cup to Manchester City. But I think they'd won the four games prior to that and had a very, very solid performance against Man United, one that will be, you know, will give them heart that they can kick on from there, and especially to transform their home form into a place that's difficult for people to come, and will get them the required number of points to lift them up the table.
And we might well see the return to the Premier League of Peter Crouch.
That's incredible, isn't it?
Looks like that's going to happen on transfer deadline day. 38.
So
yeah.
As we record it, Sam Vokes to Stoke and Peter Crouch going to Burnley. Sean Dyche, always been an admirer. So it sounds in the press.
I don't get that one, to be honest. No. Really don't get it.
Bit of an odd one.
Just take him. We don't need Peter Crouch back.
You just wouldn't bet against Crouchy coming off the bench and sticking one in, would you?
I mean, that is how they play. Yeah. They haven't done it enough this season.
He'll suit their style of play.
The more they revert to getting that ball long in the air, the more they win.
The big men haven't quite been as good as they were last season, so they've gone out and got an even bigger man, you know?
BFG coming back to the Premier League. Great to see. What about Southampton? Their draw against Crystal Palace. Wilfried Zaha scored, then was sent off, but James Ward-Prowse was the man who levelled things up for Southampton. No doubt that Ralph Hasenhüttl has made a lot of changes at Southampton. I was talking to Alex Crook, our South Coast reporter, a few days ago, really in the know on this story, and he was basically saying that Hasenhüttl in a week looked at all these players and was like, yes, no, no, yes, Charlie Austin, no, Davis, don't fancy ya, Redmond, yeah, you're in. And he just make quick assessments, because I suppose that's what you've got to do when you're in the situation they're in. And he said it to their faces as well. Like, Charlie, I'm sorry, you can't run. You can only get 30 minutes out of you. I can't use you. You've got to leave. Well, Players want that, don't they?
Yeah, you admire the honesty. You appreciate the honesty, whether it's good or bad, either way. You just want to be told. And as you say, the situation that Southampton are in, they didn't have a lot of games to play with. He had to hit the ground running. He obviously has his style of play. He knows what he wants. He's looked at the players to fit the way he wants to play. And he's made a quick assessment. And I think it was nine games? He's won four of the nine games that he's had. So he's had a really quick effect on the team. And you look at the likes of Redmond now, who is playing really well. He's getting a tune out of Ward-Prowse now as well.
He's playing Ward-Prowse.
Yeah, well, he's playing him for starters. Yeah, they've always had decent players there, but you know, the previous managers have not been able to get your regular tune out of the players. And
as he basically said before the game midweek.
So, you know, he's had a good response from the players, and it's a hard one to call this game, because Burnley beaten in five, tightened up defensively since that Everton thrashing 5-1, was it? And you know, they look more like the Burnley of last season, so they're going to be hard to beat. And you can see Southampton obviously trying to play on the counter attack with the pace of Redmond, trying to hurt him that way. So it's an intriguing one, this. I'm not really sure which way it's going to go.
No, but it's going to have huge ramifications down the bottom, whoever does, if someone does win that game. Let's move on to Brighton against Watford, 3 o'clock UK time on Saturday. Of all the teams that are just out of the mix right now, I can't help but feel that Brighton might be the one that just fall in the next few weeks. They've lost the last three, just 1 point in the last four. They've failed to score in their last two home games. They're still very reliant on Glenn Murray, who, fair enough, did score two and could have scored five in the first half in that bizarre loss against Fulham in midweek. It's games like this against Watford, one of the mid-table sides, who might be thinking a bit about winning the FA Cup a bit more than where they might finish in the Premier League. I hope they are, to be fair. Them and Wolves should be focusing a bit more on winning something, but that's just my opinion. I think Brighton need to win games like this, and that might add a certain layer of complication to this fixture.
I think they will win this as well, actually. I think, looking at it from the Watford point of view, it feels like we've had our latest good run of form, and then the loss against Spurs, which was disappointing, 1-0 up with 10 minutes to go. Yeah. Obviously, they're a good team, Spurs, but you felt that maybe we could have held on and got a point there at least. It feels like maybe we'll have a few dodgy results before coming good again. Just seems to be the way the season has gone for Watford. Brighton strong at home. I can see a narrow Brighton victory in this game.
Yeah. Only if they get a corner, though. If they don't, they'll never score a goal.
Yeah,
they're never going to happen.
They're a bit like Bournemouth, as you said. They've like they have a spell where they're doing well, then they go on a bad run, and then they seem to come back and win.
It's the same as that entire five, though, isn't it? If you go West Ham to Wolves, I think Dave, you said this in the very first show of the year. We talked about West Ham and Watford, and a bit of banter between us because we're just lads. And you basically said both those teams will win 4 in a row and lose 4 in a row. Yeah. They're going to be, and that has been the story of that whole five. If one of them could have put a run together across the season, they could be looking at Man U, Chelsea, Arsenal and trying to pip them in 6th, maybe 5th, but they've not been able to do it.
Yeah.
Any chance, Ben, that Watford might start? Some of those players might think, we're in the cup here, maybe the same as Wolves as well. Stop thinking so much about the league and start thinking about a bit of glory.
I hope not. Some people say that the cup is a distraction, but I think when you're moving towards the quarterfinal stages and with so many of the so-called bigger clubs not in the competition, yeah, I think they can certainly start having aspirations of getting very close to doing it. Both Watford and Wolves. I mean, I love the way Wolves play. I think when they're on song, they play some extremely attractive football, and they've got some very, very good players.
They were very good against West Ham in the week, weren't they?
They were really good.
They did look good.
Like, West Ham made them look good, absolutely, but they also played some really good stuff. Let's get on to Wolves. They go to Everton this weekend, 3 o'clock UK time on Saturday.
Big game this.
It is a big game.
Both teams looking to push for seventh. Silver got the win against Huddersfield, but the pressure's still there in the background for him, I think.
They've got to win some home games, haven't they?
A big defeat to Wolves, I think, he pressures right back again. And then next Saturday, he goes back to Vicarage Road.
You looking forward to that?
I am. I am indeed.
You're taking an effigy to burn? You're building it now?
I wouldn't do that personally.
No, because you're a professional.
Other people may choose differently.
You'll certainly crowdfund it.
but I think this is a tough game. Tough game for Everton.
Everton, as you say, they did win in midweek, but at home they just haven't really done it. They haven't really entertained this year. They've got a very similar points tally to this stage last year and the season before and the season before, despite changing managers, spending big money. Do you think they'll go again, Everton, under Marco Silva for next year? I mean, they're going to finish around where they are now. This season's basically done for them.
Yeah, I don't think they've got much left. They have got some very good players and they've spent a lot of money. I thought that that Gylfi Sigurdsson would probably come in and have far more of a sort of influence and as to where Everton's season was going to finish. And it's not really happened for him. And they have spent big. They've been well backed, Everton, the whoever the manager's been, but I'm just not really taking on board the way that they play and
yeah, what are
not,
they
not
doing
really
what is the style?
They've lost their way. I think start of the season they looked like a good team, and in recent it just looks like they've lost their way. Obviously conceding goals doesn't help. I mean, there was a big win obviously against Huddersfield in midweek, but I mean they lack that striker. They didn't sort that out in the summer. That was probably the main position that they should have really spent a lot of money on. They didn't
should mention
that.
We are recording the program before the transfer window closes. There's a lot of talk about Michy Batshuayi, someone like that.
Something
so that might
happen
when someone listens to this. Probably not.
Adrissa Gay, will he still be there?
Yeah, very good
in
point.
The window. They just look like they've lost their way a bit. I mean, Ben mentions Gylfi Sigurdsson. I think he's actually got double figures for goals. I think he's on 10 goals, but he hasn't been influential in games almost. It's a strange one. He takes penalties and stuff, but I think you would have expected more for the price tag of him influencing games throughout the 90 minutes, not just looking at his kind of goals total. But they have spent a lot of money, but you still feel that they've got to spend a lot more money again, and they are underperforming at the minute, so the pressure is on Silva to get a result. And Wolves are flying at the minute, only lost 2 out of their last 10 games.
And they're playing some lovely stuff, scoring some good goals. And as Dave rightly says, they were fantastic against West Ham in midweek, I say through gritted teeth.
And Johnny signed permanently as well.
He has, yes.
Yeah, I was surprised by that, £18 million. I was chatting to some of the Spanish lads and they were like, what? They don't rate him at all, but he's done a good job at Wolves.
Yeah, so. He has.
Let's move on. Final game we've not mentioned. I can't believe this has turned out last. It's just the way it's gone. But I'm really looking forward to this one. Crystal Palace, Fulham.
It's a big one as well.
Huge game. 3 o'clock Saturday UK time. Only Huddersfield have scored fewer home goals than Crystal Palace in the Premier League this season. 6. They've scored 6 goals all season at home in the league. That's mad. Fulham have shipped a league high 30 away from home. Anyone want this one? I actually couldn't tell you.
They haven't got Zaha now, have they?
No, Zaha.
You know, because he got sent off in the week. And I've got a theory about Wilfried Zaha. He reminds me of a young Andy Murray, right?
I already love this.
He's got all the ability and talent you could wish to have. But when things, well, when he perceives things to go against him, sometimes rightly, sometimes wrongly, his head goes. You can see that. Last night when he was clapping the referee, he was. You know, players know that they can get into him, rile him up, and he will react.
Did you see James Ward-Prowse's face?
He needs a couple of sessions with Ivan Lendl to sort him out. And if he could just be steely and determined and get rid of all that stuff that distracts him, he would be one of the best players around.
I think that's fantastic. That's so right. And they both had terrible really hair when they were 23 as well. Yeah. It's all there.
He brought that back really well. You know, I fully understand the comparison. But I played with Wilf, and he is a bit of a strange character. You know, personality-wise, he's a difficult, can be a difficult person to get to know, doesn't really give you a lot back. And he was like that in games. You could kind of get to him. And if he got unhappy about something, it would just affect his kind of his whole game. He would become anonymous at times, or he would do something silly. So, you know, at the time, the likes of kind of Mile Jedinak, who was, you know, the captain, the big leader in the team, he would have to police him. You know, you'd have to police Wilf quite a lot to keep him kind of on the straight and narrow. And, you know, whether he's got that now at Palace, I don't know, because he has obviously kicked on from when I played with him and become probably a better player, bit more of a character in the team, one of the best players in the team. So, you know, it was silly really what he did. You know, I do feel for him a little bit.
Got fouled a lot though, didn't he? The Bednarek one was a straight red against Bednarek. I think he even got yellowed on the night.
Yeah, I don't know why Mariner doesn't give a foul there. And, you know, sometimes he does go down a little bit easy, but the way he plays as well, he dribbles so much, and, you know, players just can't live with his pace. So
he is diving less
challenges,
though, you know. Like, we were doing shows maybe, October time, when there was a lot of Wilfried Zaha's diving a lot in games. And I was doing discussions about maybe he doesn't know what a foul is and things like that. Yeah. Because he does get fouled so often and he's sometimes diving, sometimes not. Yeah. Watched the last three games for Palace, only on TV, but I've noticed him not going down and spinning around and making a meal of it as much. Yeah. He has learned that lesson, but now he needs to be getting free kicks as well.
But I think since he came out and obviously said about it and blaming the refs and stuff, I don't think he hasn't played as well. I think his form's dipped since then. I think opposition managers now will certainly be looking at him saying, look, get into him early. If you get an opportunity to leave a little bit on him, do so, because he can lose his head and get sent off. And if you stop Wilfred Zaha, you stop Palace to a large extent.
And he won't be there this weekend.
Yeah, he won't be there.
That is an advantage for Fulham. I saw Palace last week against Spurs, as I said, and they looked really good. They were great on the counter-attack. Mm. Conor Wickham got a goal.
Yeah.
First time in a few years.
Oh, didn't he love it as well? That was nice. It's been 2.5 years or something since he even played. It was 2 years and a few weeks or something like that. Brilliant.
Yeah, but Fulham will be confident as well after that. That was a huge win for them against Brighton in the week. Yeah.
I still don't know how that happened, you know.
No.
I have no idea how, because Brighton were in such control, and then Murray should have scored again and again. And I mean, you guys have been in dressing rooms. Was it one of those things where they were like, right, we are down, this is done, unless we go out there and do... I mean, it just felt a bit like Al Pacino gave the half-time speech. We're going to get something inch by inch. Something like that. Do you know what I mean? What do you got? Must have been.
I mean, Ben's probably seen it a lot, being a Manchester United player.
He loves Pacino as well, to be fair.
They were the masters of late comebacks and winning games late. I mean, you've got nothing to lose at 2-0, I suppose, and the situation Fulham are in. And when you get that momentum, when you get it back to 2-2, then you feel as a player then, there's only going to be one winner. Once the momentum goes with you, even then the opposition team start thinking, we're going to lose this. You can just feel the kind of shift in power, and that's probably what happened. But a big, huge win for Fulham, because Brighton don't concede 4 very often. To be fair.
Lads, listen, we're out of time. I wish we could go on for longer, but unfortunately, we've run out of money to pay you for longer. Thanks, Ben. Thanks, Gabs. Thanks, Dave, as ever. We'll be back with another preview show next week when West Ham have definitely beaten Liverpool. Definitely.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.